Right, here we go on another March Madness Sunday morning in Las Vegas. Two more games today, and we will have our 2024 Final Four. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio, every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, Las Vegas flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The we also include social media director Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
And also here, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from being part of several shows here at Lotus Broadcasting, Mags also serves as the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's Outta Line. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio line, is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720.
I'm going to enjoy it tonight a little bit, and then we got to try to figure out how to beat UConn, because they're pretty good. They went on a 30-0 run, I heard, tonight. Is that correct? That's unheard of in the Elite Eight. That's crazy. So I think you guys at The Athletic wrote some article about Danny's got the formula figured out. His formula's working pretty well. So I'm going to have to figure out that formula myself here soon.
We suck at winning close games. So, you know, you got to go with the alternative.
And UConn coach Danny Hurley, and before that you heard Alabama coach Nate Oates. And hey, they've won. It's unprecedented. This team is crazy. They have won 10 straight NCAA tournament games by double digits, and that's why he said they suck at winning close games. They lose the close ones, and usually hear the good teams win the close ones. Well, not in this case. UConn, ridiculous, and we'll talk about that in a little bit when we get to the segment on March Madness. Also, Vegas Golden Knights, man, what a great road trip for them. You know, I said 2 weeks ago they had to get 6 points when they had that homestand. They had 4 games. I said they're going to need 6 points. That's exactly what they got. This was a really tough road schedule. Teams with playoff implications, teams cemented into the playoffs, and they come out of it with 7 points, 3-0-1. Great run. I said they needed 5 points is what I would hope they would get out of that road trip. They exceeded my expectations. Couple games this week at home, starting Tuesday night against the division-leading Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk about that during Nightcap shortly as well. And I'm really passionate about this week's fact this. You need to stick around. It has to do with the NBA and a specific player that actually is from my alma maters and makes me sick. And well, you'll hear about that in a little bit too. And then, you know, also the women's NCAA tournament is going on, and they're getting down to their Elite Eight also. And we've got a mention of something in there as well. But anyways, that's what is going on today. That is what is on tap. If you are looking to buy a home or refinance the home you currently own, or if you have any mortgage or real estate related questions, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. And I don't know if you're watching the show on Facebook Live or on Twitch, but if you are, you can see I'm going to pan down a little bit. You can see my shirt. And it's because, you know, I'm going to give props to my grandson, man. 3 years old today. We started celebrating his birthday last week. Like I said, he's like people under the age of 40 years old that they celebrate their birthday for a week. And then if you get under 30, it's like a month. And we started celebrating last week. So it culminates today, Easter Sunday, and his birthday. And also happy Easter to everyone out there as well. I hope you're driving safe. Those of you on your way to church, man, just turn up the radio, dialing in with us and hang around for a little bit as we get into Nightcap right now.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, well, this team, you know, they've had their ups and downs this year. Started on what looked like a historic beginning following a Stanley Cup championship. And, you know, everyone was pretty high on their horse. You had a couple of goaltenders finally cemented that position after Marc-Andre Fleury, obviously Robin Lehner, what went on with him, finding out if Logan Thompson starts last year so hot, gets hurt. Aiden Hill all of a sudden comes out of nowhere, becomes a world-class goaltender, and really guides them to the Stanley Cup championship. And then this year starts out again extremely hot, back and forth with Hill and Logan Thompson, both playing very well. And then all of a sudden the wheels kind of came off for a while. We saw a real lapse in goaltending. We saw a lapse in the guys playing in front of the goaltenders, both defensively and a problem with performing offensively. And all of it is seeming to come together right now. This last road trip, I said, would be a really good measuring stick as we get to the final stretch of the season, and it was. I mean, they went up against teams that are scrambling to make the playoffs, the St. Louis Blues, who are, you know, on the outside looking in right now. And also, you know, yesterday's game. I mean, you're talking about a Minnesota Wild team that had to win that game at home to really stay in the hunt for a playoff spot. And the Golden Knights went to Minnesota, went to overtime and beat them. And Jonathan Marchessault picks up his 40th goal of the season. Hats off to that guy. 8 goals left to catch William Karlsson's franchise record, 43, holding steady at this point. And I hope Marchie does it. I sound like some of the reporters that call him by their nickname. I didn't mean that. But, you know, I hope that he does it. This guy is, when you think of the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury will be the initial face of this team for the first, you know, 3-4 seasons. But, you know, Jonathan Marchessault has to be, if they make a trophy to Marc-Andre Fleury, they better make it a two-headed monster. Because Jonathan Marchessault, if you look at his story, just getting into the NHL, being an undersized guy, always told he wasn't big enough, wasn't good enough. Nobody ever said he wasn't fast enough because the speed's never been his issue. But his ability to play this game at both ends of the ice, to be his size, he plays bigger than he is, and I know that's an old cliche, but he truly plays bigger than his 5'9", 5'10" frame. This guy is a hockey player, and he is a winner, and he gets on the ice, and all he does is look to create or to score, and he does it, you know, as good as any top line player in this league almost. I mean, obviously you have your elite players, but Jonathan Marchessault, I would say, has cemented himself as a definitely really good player. Elite is a little bit tough, but a really good player, and going to be 34 years old next year, going to be a free agent, a lot to be decided, but right now for this season, he is the cornerstone. And you know, Chris, there's only 3 players for this Vegas Golden Knights team that have been in all 75 games. You know, obviously Jonathan Marchessault is one of those guys. You know, the 2 others are pretty blatant. One of them, for sure, we all know, this guy is a rock. Yeah. He played last year with a broken hand in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but then another guy is one of the newer Vegas Golden Knights who has also remained durable this entire season and has done a great job. Those 3 guys are the cornerstones. You only got a couple other guys that even played 70 games in this team, but Jonathan Marchessault, undersized, but one of the most reliable players in the NHL, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, look, he has somehow elevated his game higher than what we saw last year in the Stanley Cup playoffs because, I mean, he clearly was their best player.
Living up to a Vezina trophy.
Or Conn Smythe.
Conn Smythe, excuse me. Yeah, Conn Smythe trophy.
But, you know, it's like the guy just continues to find ways. And, you know, yesterday, another example. The Golden Knights did themselves a lot of favors on this road trip. John Hines helped them out a little bit yesterday, too. But I don't blame him for doing it. But I will say this. I mean, for Jonathan Marchessault to now become the second member of this franchise's history to score 40 goals in a season, and the 40th being a game winner
in overtime
against a team chasing you for a playoff spot. Although I think it's at this point The LA Kings are now chasing the Golden Knights
yep.
for a playoff spot. Look, I mean, it's a good it was a good road trip, but to just finish up on Marchessault, I've made the case numerous times on multiple shows that when he hangs it up, that his number should be hung up. It should be the very first number retired by this organization. I've gotten some pushback that look, if he goes and plays for someone else, I don't know how you. You know, and I'm like, simple. The guy won a Conn Smythe. He was an original member of this franchise, and he's been a key member for now 7 seasons.
And very likely at the end of the season will be the single-season goal-scoring record for this team, too.
He is your leader in points, your leader in goals. He's pretty much your leader in everything.
Yep.
And I know it's a young franchise, and people may push back. Oh, you don't hang up a jersey this young into a – when you win a Conn Smythe in the 6th season you exist and you're an original member of the team – I think you have to. You have to hang it up.
I think
he's the first.
They'll probably retire his and Marc-Andre Fleury's jersey.
I don't think
at the
they retire
time.
Marc-Andre Fleury's jersey.
I do.
I just don't think he never won anything.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, he won a Vezina, but you got to win the ultimate prize in this sport.
But Chris, really, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury was the initial face of this franchise. He came here as a 2-time Stanley Cup champion. Two-time that he was the goalie for them. But the point is that this guy was as good as it gets, and everybody knew him. He was the biggest name that came here initially.
Yeah.
And he lived up to it. He got them to a Stanley Cup Finals first season. They got screwed the second season in that San Jose first-round series. They should have gone to a second round at least.
They probably would have gone to the final again.
And very, very possible. So I say you got to remember Marc-Andre Fleury because of the fact he was the initial star. But you're 100% right. As soon as they can retire Jonathan Marchessault, I don't care where he goes or what happens the rest of his career, what he has done here, he has become a fan favorite. And again, his story alone of getting to the NHL and what he did to get here and how this guy, you know, like he's one of those guys, one of those underdog stories that was told his whole life that you're too small, you're not going to make it, and he has just overachieved, and he continues to. It's like, you know, he wins the Conn Smythe last year, and he's elevated his game again, like you said, but typically you'll see a guy elevate his game at 27 years old, not at 33, 34, playing his best hockey right now, and I do hope they retain him. I still hold out to say that I just don't think it's going to happen based on his age and the money that he commands and deserves, but hey, I hope they find a way. There is money in the cap that they can figure out a few things. And I hope that they do, but no question about it. He is, as the Vegas Golden Knights go, so goes Jonathan Marchessault. He is that good of a player. I understand and I agree with Mark Stone being the captain of this team, but I'll tell you what, when Mark Stone's not out, I understand Jack Eichel is the best player on this team. I still let Marchie wear the C because he deserves it. I mean, this guy is Vegas Golden Knights hockey, and he'll always be remembered. And again, I think down the road, retiring his jersey just cements that and makes sure that it happens. And you know, we'll never forget him. The people that have been here from day one will always remember what this guy's done. I'm talking about him like he's gone. He's got a lot of time left, and they're going to need great play from him from here on out to get into the playoffs and to make any kind of a run. But yesterday, again, a 2-1 win in overtime at Minnesota. Huge game for both teams. And again, to beat a team that's desperate, that really needs this win. They're like 6 points out of a playoff spot. They needed this, and it pretty much got rid of them. Now they're 8 points down. They're done. So, you know, that is gigantic. And again, the 4-game road trip to go 3-0-1 was huge. They should have really gone 4-0. The collapse in Nashville hurt. But again, the bottom line is they still got a point out of that. They still went to overtime. They hung in there to get to overtime. And, you know, Nashville just they got into quicksand, and that was the way that was. But, you know, I mentioned talking earlier on about Logan Thompson. And, Chris, I think, you know, I said earlier, well, Aiden Hill's established himself as the number one goaltender. Aiden Hill, since he came back from injury, has not been the same guy. And right now, you know, he's gone out for a minute. Yuri Patera came in. He played really well against Nashville up until that third period. Everything kind of collapsed in front of him. But, again, he didn't play well in the third period. But I'm comfortable with him being behind Logan Thompson. He's got a lot of experience. He's shown that he can make world-class saves. He made a couple of huge saves earlier in that game. and I like him. But Logan Thompson, if he can continue to build on this, Chris, and keep playing better and better, that bodes well for the Vegas Golden Knights going forward.
Well, Logan Thompson has kind of taken the bull by the horns. You know, there was an opportunity in front of him, and, you know, I like you, thought that there was a dip in Aiden Hill's play. But you know what? That's the great part about having two solid guys in net. You have the ability, if one of them is struggling, to hopefully throw the other one in, and he plays well. And there was a stretch where neither of them were playing well. But Logan Thompson really has – I mean, I was kind of calling for it a bit on the VGK Insider Show that he should have the opportunity to win the number one job. And, you know, I wasn't hoping Aiden Hill got hurt. I mean, that it's just an unfortunate circumstance that he did get hurt. But – credit Logan Thompson. You know, he's been the backup. He's been the number two guy for a large chunk of this season. And, you know, now that we're down the stretch run and we're getting ready for another playoff run, he's really finding his game. I mean, he's allowed one goal, I think, in five straight games or something ridiculous like that. I mean, it's a credit to the way he's played. It really is. I mean, he's been really, really good. And they've needed him to be really, really good as they found their game. But defensively, the team has been really solid in front of him as well, with the exception of that third period. And we'll chalk that up to just running on empty against a hot team. So, look, I mean, good on the Golden Knights and certainly good on Logan Thompson. Logan Thompson is a guy who I think we all like. We like watching him play. He's fun. He's a little bit daring in net. He takes risks. Reminds me of another guy that we just talked about, the way he plays.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
And, you know, it's funny because Hill and Thompson play completely different games.
Yeah.
And I think both of them fit. And I think there's a spot for both of them here. You just need both of them to be healthy. And hopefully Hill gets healthy, because I do think you will need both of them if you plan on repeating, because it's a tough, tough road to get to 16 wins in the NHL playoffs. And I think you need both of your goalies ready to go, because, I mean, no knock on Yuri Patera, but he's not at that level yet. And, you know, I mean, if you have to rely on him to win you games, it's a tough ask for a young kid.
No, I agree with you, Chris. And, you know, I still think I'd like to see the Golden Knights climb this ladder a little bit. I don't like the first-round matchup. I'd really like them to somehow get into the second position in the Pacific Division, which I think is possible. They're four games back of the Edmonton Oilers right now with eight games to play.
What
the
you
problem
hope for,
is Edmonton has two games in hand.
Yeah, what you hope for is Edmonton catches Vancouver.
Yeah.
Because I think the Golden Knights would
rather play Vancouver.
I don't think any of them are going to tell you
that
they'd rather play Vancouver. But as a guy who is around fans all the time, and a guy who doesn't have any skin in the game, I would rather see them play Vancouver.
There's no question about it. I've said forever, and I said it last year. I mean, they got past Edmonton last season in the postseason, and it was really good. But again, any line that's got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on it, they are a power play juggernaut. When you have got two guys like that in a 5-on-4 situation or a 4-on-4 situation, or worse yet, in overtime, they are almost unbeatable. Now, at least in the playoffs, the games just continue, and it's 5-on-5, which gives people a little bit of a chance. But still, you just don't want to play them. They are a very, very dangerous team. The bottom line is you're not getting a really easy matchup in this year's postseason. From top to bottom, you were talking about really good hockey teams in both divisions. The team I'm most worried about is my Red Wings, who, you know, they've been just battling and they've been fighting for that playoff spot, and now they're playing themselves into trouble. They're, you know, 3-5-2 in their last 10 games, and now they're a couple of points out of the final playoff spot. They're 2 points behind Philadelphia and Washington, and my Red Wings got to do it, man. They got to get in this year, because I haven't yet had a season where I've had both the Golden Knights and the Red Wings in the playoffs at the same time. I want to see that once, and I thought this might be the year, so I'm hoping they can pick it up here at the end. But, you know, again, don't sleep on the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, with what they're happening. Don't get overhyped. This is a nice stretch, and they're playing well at the right time. And one of the things I've been asked a lot about, Chris, and I can ask you, is Mark Stone and Tomas Hertl. Those are two guys that, if they can get healthy and show up for the postseason, they make this Vegas Golden Knights a different team. And not just with what they do on the ice, but both of them tremendous veteran leaders.
Yeah, I think we'll see Hertl before we see Stone. I don't think we're going to see Stone at the earliest until at least the second round of the playoffs. I think if that's being optimistic.
Has he been skating at City National? I heard. He hasn't been skating.
No, he hasn't. I mean, that type of injury, from what I understand and from what I've read, you cannot really do any physical activity until
that spleen needs to heal.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about, not only is he not skating, but he can't even really be doing things to stay in shape because you need that spleen to heal 100%. Look, I mean, it's a gruesome injury, and anyone who makes light of it is quite simply a horrific human being. But,
or they just don't know. You well, might be oblivious, no, I mean, how important the spleen is to the human body.
I don't even know what the spleen does, but I know based on what I've read that it's a pretty serious thing.
It's almost a vital organ for the most part, without question.
The injury could kill you if it's bad enough. So, look, it was a pretty nasty hit. I mean, it was a clean hit, but it was a nasty hit in that, you know, a lot of us aren't getting up right away after the hit he took from Jakob Trenin. So it's one of those things where you're at wait and see, but I mean, you're going to need, you know, at least a few weeks after he's cleared to play for him to be ready to play, because of the fact that it's a pretty serious injury.
Well, what it basically does is it cleans out your blood. I mean, the spleen really separates your white and red blood cells, your platelets, which cause healing. I mean, your spleen is a vital part of your existence.
Yeah, so obviously the recovery for that is
pretty important.
Yeah, but as far as Hertl, I have heard some things that he is getting pretty close. I don't know how close. Possibly Tuesday. I don't know. That's one thing that I've heard of. Of course, I would say I don't think they skate today, but if you see Tomas Hertl out at City National Arena tomorrow skating in a full contact jersey, you're going to see him very soon. And I don't know if he's that close, but I know he's close. And look, for the Golden Knights, I mean, here's the problem you're facing right now. Who do you take out? I mean, common sense says that you're probably going to take out Paul Cotter. But when William Carrier comes back, then what? Then who are you taking out?
Yeah, it's really tough right now. Because I'll tell you one guy you're not taking out, Pavel Dorofeev, is going nowhere.
And listen, Michael Amadio, you're not taking him out.
No way.
You're not taking Brett Howden out.
A spark plug. You're
100%
right.
I love Amadio's game. Like, I feel like he does not get enough credit for being just a guy who always finds a way to make a play.
He's a grinder, Chris.
Yeah,
and a guy that, you know,
like, he's not a big guy. No. He's, you know, he's not flashy.
He's
but
one of those guys.
He's
again,
a good hockey player.
It's an old cliche. He's a blue collar hockey player.
And he's a guy who has earned himself a raise. You know, he's a free agent at the end of the year. I don't know if there's room to re-sign him, but Michael Amadio is going to be, if he's not here, he's going to be a good player for someone else because he's a good player. He could play.
No, I agree 100%, and it is really tough. I mean, there is just nobody to root.
I just don't know. Like if you're Bruce Cassidy, I mean, it's – Yeah. And if you're an opponent, pick your poison.
Yeah, I don't know who they take out. It's going to be – when Carrier comes back again, it is going to be really tough. Anthony Mantha, we see what he brings to the ice.
Oh, he was fantastic.
I mean,
on
this
the road
guy
trip.
Is
yeah.
so good that just like a great late addition. Like they, you know, again, I can make my predictions and give you my assumptions. However, I'm done, and I haven't done it in a while. Kelly McCrimmon and George McVie, I do not question what these guys do.
No, and
if you do, you're really stupid. And that's what makes Bill Foley one of the best, in my opinion, owners in the National Hockey League. He lets the hockey people make the hockey decisions.
Yeah.
He opens his wallet, says, how much do you need? Let's get to the cap. I want to win. And he said it from year one. He wanted to win in 6 years, and he did it.
Yeah.
This guy wants to win. And so many owners make the mistake of getting too involved. Bill Foley is involved, but not when it comes to hockey decisions.
Well, he's involved in the aspect that, hey, boss, can we have the money to do this?
That's it. Are we going to win with that guy? Yep. Okay.
Okay. How much?
Yep.
Like, that's basically Bill Foley's involvement. And, like, look, if I'm a fan of a franchise, I don't want Jerry Jones as my owner. I'm sorry. I don't. I know the guy won 3 Super Bowls like 30 years ago. They haven't won crap since.
Well, he's gotten kind of soft.
Well, his
like
ego.
Jason Garrett. How the hell did he keep him employed?
Well,
he liked
Jason
long?
Garrett.
Yeah, I know, but
like
too
that's
much.
That's the problem. Like that's the problem. Yeah. Your ego. His ego ran the best thing that happened to the Cowboys. Jimmy Johnson ran Jimmy out the door.
Now, George Steinbrenner had a similar issue like that.
Him and Billy Martin.
I was just going to say, he ran Billy Martin out 3 different times and kept bringing him back. But he brought him back because of his desire to win.
Yeah.
I think Jerry Jones has softened up a bit.
I think Jerry wants to win. I just think the problem is Jerry thinks he can win by running the franchise. Yeah. And the reality is, you
don't hire head coaches you can push around.
No.
I mean, you really don't.
I want a head coach who... Well, it's not even – well, in the NFL, it's a little bit different, right, than it is in the NHL, whereas the GM is a lot more, I think, involved in day-to-day operations in the NHL than he is in the NFL. I mean, there's so much movement, and the rosters are obviously so fluid, whereas in the NFL, it's – look, you obviously want a stern general manager. You don't want some pushover either. But, look, I mean, I don't want the owner who is involved. I know Bill Foley because, obviously, being around Vegas, I've seen him. But, like, I don't want to see him around the team, like, around the general manager and telling the general manager what to do. Bill Foley's not that guy.
No.
And that's why they're so successful.
100%. I mean, I remember the uproar. And I'm not going to say I was thrilled about it when they let Gerard Gallant go. I mean, we all love Gerard Gallant. He was a great initial head coach of this team. And a lot of people were upset. You bring in Pete DeBoer, who basically was the coach of the number one enemy in San Jose. And I understood all of that. But the one thing you cannot have as an owner, it is absolutely the biggest mistake, is patience, and you cannot have a bigger word, loyalty. Loyalty is a wonderful word and a wonderful human trait. However, it is a bad trait for owners of professional franchises because the bottom line is it's about winning. And I have been in Detroit, and I can say this, because the bottom line is the Ford family has had a problem with loyalty my entire life up until recently. I really like what Sheila Ford Hamp is doing there. I think she wants to win, but the bottom line is that has killed the Detroit Lions for years loyally. Hanging on, like Matt Millen, that guy should have been gone right after.
Should have been hired.
100%. You know, you guys way back to Russ Thomas years ago before anyone's time. He got William Clay Ford off the bottle, and so William Clay Ford felt this loyalty to him. I stopped being an alcoholic because of him, so I'm going to keep around for 20 years. Everyone hated him, and he produced losers, and he would argue with all pro players about stupid things when he would negotiate contracts because back then you didn't have agents. They dealt directly with the players. But my point is, this has been the Ford family, and loyalty is there an example of loyalty which kills professional franchises. Bill Foley, it's not about being loyal. He's loyal to listening to what to do. And he understood, I mean, right away he hired people with great hockey knowledge, a guy like George McPhee, and then brought in Kelly McCrimmon, and these guys are great manipulators. Great, they maneuver tremendously, and they understand the game, and they really understand this team, and putting in the right parts and finding pieces to the puzzle that are missing around the trading deadline. I think they did it again this year. I think the guys they picked up, Chris, are so important to this team going forward. And right now, I hope they do get Mark Stone back by the second series. Just his presence alone, he is one of the most emotional leaders in the National Hockey League. This guy gets you fired up just watching him. And Tomas Hertl speaks for himself. If you know the NHL, you know who this guy is. A seasoned veteran that can get things done at both ends of the ice. And again, his presence alone is something that will help the Vegas Golden Knights when he starts suiting up. The good news is, as Chris said, who are they going to move around? Every team and every person that understands sports loves that problem. Who do we sit because we're too deep? That is never a problem for me, and I love the fact that they'll have to make this decision. They've got 2 games this week. They're home Tuesday night, a huge game against Vancouver, and to me, that is another measuring stick. That is a game they've got to bring their best hockey and show they're playing their best. A game Logan Thompson has to show up, another where hopefully he doesn't let in more than a goal or two, and they find a way to win that. And Friday, without question, a must win against the Arizona Arizona Coyotes potential trap game that they cannot lose because they need those points. Right now, I say this week, be content if they get 2 points this week because they just got seven on a road trip with out of a possible eight. But I'd like to see them get 3 or hopefully 4 points by Friday because if they do, they put themselves in a better position. I do agree with Chris as well. I would like to see Edmonton catch Vancouver because Edmonton in the first round is going to be awful tough, especially with them having home ice advantage. Listen, let's move on. I want to talk to you about, obviously, March Madness, man, going crazy here. My favorite time of the year. You know, I am an NFL guy, always have been a football guy, so the NFL playoffs are my favorite sporting event in the world. They just are, culminating with the Super Bowl. But there is nothing that lights any true sports enthusiast up like March Madness, man. It's the best ever. And once again this year, you know, and somehow the cream rises to the top. You always have Cinderellas, and there's reasons for it. And I love teams like North Carolina State that literally make the playoffs by winning their conference tournament. Now, you've seen many teams do that in smaller conferences, you know, at every level. But when you win and you come from the back like North Carolina State did in a Power 5 conference division, especially one of the best conferences annually in the country in the ACC, it's a team to look out for. North Carolina State did this way back in 1983 when Jimmy Valvano took the Wolfpack to the NCAA championship, did the same thing. They might have gotten in the NIT that year. This year, maybe they'd have gotten the NIT with a 500 record. I don't know. But they were definitely not nowhere slated anywhere near the NCAA tournament, just like they weren't back in 83. And in 83, they went on an incredible run, and they ended up winning the national title. I just can't see that happening this year because there is something standing in their way that, to me, is better than Phi Slamma Jamma. The Houston Cougars were back in 83. This team is the Connecticut Huskies that are about as good as it gets. And, you know, this was Danny Hurley after last night's game, what he had to say. I mean, this guy is one of the best coaches in the country, and I think we all have to recognize that now.
You go into all these games, you know, believing that it's going to be a 40-minute battle to the end. You know, but again, we were able to just kind of systematically break them down in the second half there. These guys are awesome.
I mean, awesome might be an understatement. I mean, this team, you know, they started out the they start at the end of the first half, Chris. They get a basket. The score is 23-23 at the time. And then UConn goes on a 30-point run. And, it was absolutely ridiculous. Illinois didn't get their next basket till like 6 minutes into the second half. I mean, UConn, one of the best offensive teams in the country, top 10 defensive teams in the country. To me, this team, if there was ever a college basketball team, and I go back to the Patrick Ewing days at Georgetown, I have not seen an unbeatable team like this in college. I don't know how anyone beats them. They have now won, as I said at the top of the show, they have now won 10 straight NCAA games by double digits. It's unprecedented.
Well, they're 31-1 over the last 2 years against teams that are not in the Big East. So you got to ask the question, what's in the water in the Big East? The teams are beating them. But you know, Danny Hurley is a real interesting story because he was a guy. I mean, he's from my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
My cousin went to high school with him at St. Anthony's. His father, of course, Bob Hurley Sr., a legend in high school basketball, but a legend off the court as well for what he did for that community. And Danny and Bobby both grew up there. And I know Bobby's hated here in Vegas, and we won't talk about him.
One of the toughest-nosed college guards I've ever seen.
Danny was a guy who kind of lived in the shadow of his brother, and he had a tough time at Seton Hall, another school maybe I shouldn't mention. But he had a tough time in college.
As a player.
Yeah. And look, he found his path, and he coached St. Benedict's High School in New Jersey.
Yep.
He grinded out. You know, he did it the hard way. I think he coached at Wagner on Staten Island, or maybe that was his brother. One of them coached at Wagner, but he went to Rhode Island, and he coached at Rhode Island, and he got them into a Sweet 16. And then he goes to UConn, and it took a couple years for him to get it going. But Brian, I mean, it's like him, he is his father on the basketball court when it comes to coaching. I mean, Bob Hurley Sr. was, I mean, I was fortunate. I got to see St. Anthony's play, and that guy, he cared. Like, it was so important to him. The guy was a corrections officer. not a corrections officer, a parole officer. Like, that's what his day job was. And he coached this tiny high school in Jersey City with 350 kids. Unfortunately, it's now closed. The basketball team was really the only thing that kept the school open. But, I mean, Danny came from a tough place. You know, Jersey City is, it's a tough town. And I know because my father grew up there. I've got a lot of family who came through those streets. And, you know, it's a tough place to grow up. And Danny, I think, exuberates everything that's great about his father in terms of coaching acumen. But he's a grinder. Like, he's going to make you work. Like, you play for him, you are going to work. And it starts with defense. What they did to Illinois yesterday. Look, Illinois was a Big Ten champ. Mm-hmm. No slouch. I mean, we're not talking about them beating, you know, Holy Cross. They beat Illinois.
Chris, not only that, you know, the one thing, you know, yesterday, the player that really is just ridiculous for UConn, and they've got a bunch of them, but I mean, the bottom line is Donovan Klingon is ridiculous. And yesterday, you know, the most impressive stat of the night for Klingon yesterday was not the fact that he scored 22 points, not the fact that he pulled down 10 boards, or not even his 5 block shots, Chris. You know what it was? Illinois was 0-for-19 on shots contested by Donovan Klingon, and that includes Terrence Shannon Jr., I think the guy is, and he is the leading scorer at Illinois, also a third-team All-American, two-time first-team Big Ten by the coaches, and he was 0-for-6 every time Klingon contested, but 0-for-19 when he contested a shot. That, look at all the other stats, almost a triple-double. This guy is just so good at both ends of the floor for UConn. He dominates the middle.
Well,
and I don't know, I don't know how you get past it. I don't know what the answer is for this kid. I really don't.
I mean,
get him in foul trouble?
That's probably it. You know, like, you watch these guys play. I mean, they just they destroyed Illinois. They destroyed San Diego State. I mean, they made San Diego State. I mean, this was a team that they blew out last year, but at least San Diego State kind of pushed a little bit in the second half. Last year, made a game of it, but
Chris, a 30-point run yesterday.
Yeah,
that's I've never heard of anything like that.
It's unheard of. And look, and I know that we'll probably have this discussion if they win the national title.
You mean when?
They are the premier college basketball team right now, and they have, look. They are, and I know people will poo-poo me saying, "Oh, well, they didn't win a national title until the mid to late '90s." They're a blue blood program.
No question about
it. And anyone who says that they're not is an idiot, because this is a program that's won national titles with 3 different coaches in the last 25, 30 years. Jim Calhoun is a legend.
He is. Kevin
Ollie won a national title with a team that you couldn't name any player on.
100%.
I mean,
all those teams that bounced from the Big East because it was losing its luster.
Yeah.
Seton Hall and Connecticut are showing the Big East is still around, people. Yeah. Don't sleep on it.
I mean, look, I think Creighton had a good run.
No doubt.
You know, and in years past, Xavier's been pretty good. Yep. But St. John's is certainly going to be back.
This is the blue blood program now in
UConn,
the country.
UConn is absolutely in the discussion. Look, if they win, and I know you say when, I'll say if they win, this is 6 national titles for them.
Yeah.
That's every bit as impressive as Kansas.
And let me tell you something. Defending a national title is insane.
They're the first team to go back to the Final Four in 16 years.
What makes it so insane? It's the one and done. It's what makes March Madness great. It's so hard to win 6 games in a row in this tournament, no matter who you are. Guns for them. I mean, everyone knows and prepares more for them than any other team. Everyone understands what they're up against. Everyone has looked at every film there is, and there is just no answer for what Danny Hurley has put together, in stores. There's no answer for it.
A good way to look at it is, you know, his father was really good at identifying kids who he was able to mold into outstanding young men and great high school basketball players. I mean, he sent like something insane, like 120 kids to D1 programs or to college. I mean, think about that. A high school team sending 120 kids into college programs. So there's obviously something there in the Hurley family where they're able to identify, you know, these kids who really fit what they – like a lot of times I think coaches, they get enamored by stars.
They'd probably all be good psychiatrists.
Yeah.
They're able to figure out who goes with who.
The father was a parole officer. Yeah. I mean, that tells you, you know. So I think, you know, when it comes to recruiting, UConn doesn't need to go out and get the five-star kids because they get the kids that fit their program. They get the kids that fit what they want to do. And, you know, sometimes they go odd places to find those kids. And it's what separates the great coaches from the good coaches.
No, I agree. You look at Alabama. Alabama is completely a portal team this year. These guys never play. The starting five have not played together. You know, and for that reason, you know, I give a lot of credit to Alabama's
coach. They're good. Nate Oates. Yeah.
And I give a lot of credit to Nate Oates for going in the portal and making a championship caliber team. Unfortunately, they're about to run up against a juggernaut. UConn's the first defending national champion to make it to the Final
Four. Since 2008.
Since 2007 when Florida won it.
Florida goes back to back.
But Alabama will be the 12th team in NCAA tournament history to make its Final Four debut against the reigning national champions. Just so you know, the teams making their debut went 0-11, losing by an average of 15.3 points a game. There's some stats for you, Spencer. But how do you like that? That 0-11, and I'll tell you what, Chris, they're about to be 0-12. There is no way Alabama is beating UConn. I'll tell you right now. You probably got to put $1 million on him to win 50 grand. You might as well do it because it's not happening.
How about the fact that Nate Oates came from the University of Buffalo?
Yeah.
And Danny Hurley's brother, Bobby, coached at the University of Buffalo before him. So there's a connection there between the schools and Hurley and Nate Oates. But I liked watching Alabama. I was rooting for Clemson in that game. I really wanted to see them get through. But the big kid that Alabama has, I can't remember his name, but man, he's a good player. The kid with the mustache, goofy haircut, kind of looks like.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yes,
but he's a good player, man.
They got they got that one guy, Chef something, where they all wear chef hats. He's like a fan favorite. But real quickly, I want to say
because we're all NC State today, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, NC State is they play in the later game.
I don't care who wins the other game.
I agree. Believe me, I agree with you 100%.
I really want to see Purdue. It's going to be. Although I say I'd like to see Purdue against UConn in the final.
I think Purdue and NC State win today for a couple of reasons. Purdue, the bottom line is they live and die by Edie. We all know that. A lot of you are going to disagree with that statement. I do not believe Edie ends up making it in the NBA. I understand he's a very big guy. I understand he can score. I don't think he has the physical toughness. I think the guys in the NBA will push him around. He's got to change his game. He's got to become a more physical player. And one thing he lacks defensively. And that is gigantic in the NBA. If you're 7 feet tall, you've got to be able to be a decent defender. He's an easy guy to get around, and I think NBA players with their speed will blow right past him, and that's going to be his problem. However, at the collegiate level, he's as good of a big man as there is in the NBA in the NCAA right now. Tennessee, man, that is a gritty, tough team coming from a tough conference. As you see, one of their teams is already in the Final Four in Alabama in the Southeastern Conference. Tennessee is tough. They can play with anybody, and don't overlook them. I wouldn't be shocked if they beat Purdue. I just think Purdue wins this game and gets into the Final Four. And when it comes to the other game, here's the reason I like NC State over Duke. Duke should win the game, but NC State is on one of those rolls, like I said, a team that runs through their conference tournament the way they did, and it's the ACC. NC State is playing their best ball. They are completely a well-rounded team. They are very, very strong on the inside, as we all know, and they can make a run. Where NC State's going to falter is probably next week, where Purdue may benefit, is that 1 week off, that second week off, when you got to come down to earth and now you're playing the best teams in college basketball. That's where NC State could have some problems, but I do think they get through Duke today. And again, I like Purdue in this game, but I think it's really close, man. It's a toss-up because Tennessee can run and gun with the best of them. They're very well coached. And again, the Southeastern Conference, Alabama's already in, and Tennessee's right on the edge. Could be the best conference in college basketball cumulatively this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people thought the Big 12 was the best. And
goodbye.
I mean, Kansas falling off really hurt the Big 12, of course. I mean, but look, I mean, the SEC, sure, you've got teams like Kentucky losing in the first round, but
Kentucky been off all
if
year.
They get two teams in the Final Four, I mean, you certainly will make the argument that, hey, this is a conference that probably, you know, Florida was pretty good. Obviously, Tennessee is still playing. Alabama in the Final Four. I mean, look, Brian. I mean, it's a tough conference. You know,
it's a conference.
These super conferences are getting tougher and tougher.
And they really prepare you, Chris, for this stage.
Yeah,
that's
the
conference tournament really. That's why NC State's in this run. Those conference tournaments are so demanding that if you can find your way through it, the confidence that you gain is immense. I was disappointed
NC
with New
State
Mexico.
Was a 10 seed.
You know, I was disappointed with New Mexico. But although look who met New Mexico got bumped by Clemson, who made it all the way to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, Clemson was on a roll.
And that's the problem, like with the committee. They know what they're doing when they put certain teams in certain spots. Like their goal ultimately is to have non-power conference teams knock each other out early on, and they put them in tough games. They underseed these teams. I mean, San Diego State was a 5 seed and they made a run to the Sweet 16, but some of the other Mountain West teams, they were underseeded.
No doubt.
And it hurts them, and it allows people to make Snyder remarks like, well, look, Mountain West got 6 teams. They didn't deserve 6 teams. Only 2 of them won games or 3 of them won games. But it's like, if you put some of these teams where they deserve to be seeded, maybe they win more games.
No, I agree. I agree with you. And the one thing
New Mexico never had a chance.
No. Well, you know, I mean, Clemson was a really tough opponent, and I thought that was an unfair matchup in their first round, considering they ran through, they had to play in a play-in game and then won the Mountain West Conference. And a team that was in and out of the rankings, the top 25 all season, I thought they got unfairly ranked, and we saw what happened. I'm just going to tell you right now my prediction for the final, for the championship game. I won't give my championship prediction, but it will already be through the first couple games in the Final Four by next Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say
I see
Purdue playing NC State. Purdue's going to win, and come on, it's Connecticut. And you know who I'm going to pick next week too, but I'll leave it that way so we can discuss it more next week. But I'm going to say that's my final championship game. It's going to be Purdue playing UConn. What do you think?
I I'm not 100% sold on Purdue.
I'm not either.
They've laid some stinkers in the NCAA tournament over the last couple of years. They seem to be playing well now. I mean, they're playing really good basketball. They've been in the top three, it seems, all season. But you know what? Tennessee's feisty. I think the Vols are ripe to maybe pick them off. I can't ever root for Duke or pick Duke, so I'm going to root for NC State 100%. Give me NC State and Tennessee in that Final Four. I'd love to see it. And, I mean, obviously, I think UConn will beat Alabama. So, but we'll wait till next week to discuss that. So, give me Tennessee and NC State. I like the Vols.
Okay. What I'm going to say is, I will say this for Tennessee: out of the teams remaining in the tournament, I said before the tournament, to me, the only team that I thought had a shot at beating UConn
is Tennessee.
Because of the way they run the floor and stuff, was Houston. Believe it or not.
You know what? Dak.
But the Iowa State exposed them, and so I kind of changed my opinion.
Yeah.
And like you just said, I kind of leaned over and I said the type of game that Tennessee plays, if they play a perfect game,
they
and Utah has a little, excuse me, UConn has a little bit of a letdown. Tennessee, but I don't think there's another team left that has any shot to even make it a game against Utah.
No, Duke, UConn. NC State, No.
I think, but Tennessee could make it a game, and that therefore that might be your best national championship
matchup. Well, they would,
matchup.
You know what? They would also be, I don't think they've ever made a Final Four, so. You know, you could potentially have two teams making.
No,
their...
it's you know, like I said, it's cool. The thing to me, and I do enjoy. I do like Danny Hurley. I don't mind UConn. I just would like to think that another team has a chance, and I just really don't. Spence, I'd let you pick, but I know we're getting a little bit behind. Go ahead and hit fact this because I've been waiting for this all show.
Uh oh.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact this is brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation today. It is a fact. 3 minutes into this past Wednesday night's game between the Golden State Warriors and Orlando Magic, Draymond Green was ejected from his 19th NBA regular season game. This is the second most ejections in NBA history over the past 25 seasons. He only trails Rasheed Wallace, who was tossed from 25 games in his career. Draymond Green's not done. But you know what makes me sick about this even more? Only 2 days later, this past Friday, 2 days after he gets ejected for the 19th time in his NBA career in the regular season, late in the game against the Charlotte Hornets with the Warriors way ahead, he tried to kick the Magic Grant Williams in the balls. Period. That's what he did. And you can see the replay and Spencer showing it. You can clearly see that was his intention. I am sick to my stomach. Spencer, I'll let you chime in on this since you put it together. When is enough enough with this guy? Here he's a Michigan State alumni. I'm embarrassed by him. I'm going to say he is an intelligent guy off the basketball court when you live. It's not a matter of stupidity. It is a matter of a lack of self-control, a lack of discipline, a lack of control, period, and a lack of being able to get out of your own flipping way. Isn't it enough now, 19 ejections, and some of the things, I mean, for God's sakes, what he did to Jordan Poole in practice a year ago, to me, was criminal. It should have been literally, I mean, he should have faced charges for that. That was assault. When do they say, we're done with this guy?
I don't know. I mean, Adam Silver, this is just kind of the NBA that he's made for himself. And I just think it's littered all over basketball. The product just isn't as good anymore. And it just feels like when David Stern was around, everyone had a lot of criticisms about him. But the product was good. He was very stern, no pun intended, about like with his players, the punishments that he handed down. It's just so light. Like Ja Morant gets all these games off, but like players can do all these crazy things. Like Draymond Green can literally knock out his teammate, and there's essentially no punishment. You know, Draymond says he goes to therapy and he comes right back out and it's nothing has changed. So I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to end as long as Adam Silver is commissioner. This is just kind of the NBA that he's created for himself.
Yeah, you know, and I struggle because I really liked Adam Silver when he came in and replaced David Stern when David Stern retired, because Adam Silver's a big Las Vegas guy. And I knew once he took the helm, Las Vegas would see an NBA franchise, which I still think they will very soon. However, I'm not going to disagree with your knock on him. He is too lenient in some cases. I mean, Draymond Green was set to retire, and I think Adam Silver talked him out of it. He's still got gas left in the tank. Defensively, Draymond Green can still be one of the most dominating defensive players in the game when he's in his right mind. But the problem is these antics. When you see Steph Curry pull a jersey over his head and have to be talked off a ledge by Steve Kerr at the end of the game, enough is enough. I don't know if it will be or when it will be, but Spencer, did the Golden State Warriors move on from this guy at the end of the season? Is it just enough time to say goodbye to him?
Well, they're going to have to figure out something because they're falling apart and they could even miss like the play-in tournament. That's how bad their season has gone. They've won a couple games here and it's been really important. Steph Curry's kind of playing his best ball, but he can't do that every night. I mean, he's becoming older. You know, Klay Thompson's falling apart too. So yeah, I think they should move on because it's just this thing that they have to deal with constantly. And it's such a distraction for the team. And I think they really need to rebuild the team around Steph Curry. They've like tried to keep the same team that they had all these years ago. And that's just not really how basketball works.
No, I agree with you. It's nice to see Klay Thompson getting back to his old form. He's playing well, earning his minutes on the court. I think they're now looking back at starting him again. But yeah, the Golden State Warriors, I think, are too good of a team to be going through what they're going through. They're well coached. They've got one of the best scorers in NBA history on their team. And Draymond Green has become a cancer. He went from a great defensive player and a cornerstone of this franchise to being a cancer in a matter of a couple of years. I think he's got to go. And I think they've got to make some type of stipulation that, you know, how many more games can you get thrown out of before they throw the towel? And for him to almost kick Grant Williams in the nuts 2 days after he gets suspended and has all the controversy, everyone talking about Steph all bitter, and in a game they're winning by a mile, was just low class and disgusting, in my opinion. He needs to get out. Listen, we're almost out of time. The last thing I want to say is, you know, the Caitlin Clark thing, people, she could not play in the NBA. She couldn't be on the back end of the bench at Macomb Community College. Not because she's not great. She is great. And you'll see that in the LSU-Iowa game coming up in the Elite Eight. The problem is, anatomically, men and women are different. Physically, she wouldn't be able to hang in the men's game at an elite level. It's just that simple. So please get that out of your repertoire. Listen, we're out of time. I'm Brian Feldman. I want to thank Spencer, Chris Magnum Chapman, and all of you out there. Listen, we'll be back next week. Next week, we'll be talking about the NCAA championship game. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.